Okay, good afternoon. Firstly, I'd like to give you an update on the two tropical cyclones in the Pacific. Tropical cyclone Ilui in the region of the Solomons and tropical cyclone Thomas, which is currently near Fiji. Cyclone Ilui has intensified to a Category 5, and there have been reports of damage and flooding in the Solomon regions, particularly in the southern Solomon Islands group. Despite its intensity, latest reports say that it has slightly weakened in the last 6 to 12 hours. Cyclone Thomas has increased to a Category 4 storm with destructive hurricane force winds. A tropical cyclone warning is in place for the entire Fiji group. Nandi Airport is currently open, but all international flights are delayed or cancelled. It is anticipated that the full impact of the storm will be felt later this afternoon and overnight. Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade staff are continuing to monitor both cyclones and their impact. We will be assessing our response based on what develops, and that assessment will be made in conjunction with our partners in the Pacific. The advice to New Zealanders in relation to Cyclone Thomas is that they should register and follow instructions issued by local authorities. There are currently about 450 New Zealanders registered with the High Commissioner in Suva, although the actual number is likely to be higher, as many people may not have registered. In terms of changes to travel advisories in the Pacific, people who intend to travel to the affected areas of the Pacific are well advised to keep close watch on the Safe Travel website, which is www.safetravel.govt.nz for further information. Let me move to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I'd like to say a few words about the start of the talks today on a free trade agreement spanning eight countries in the Asia-Pacific region, including the United States. The start of the talks in Melbourne on the Trans-Pacific Partnership is an important milestone in our free trade agenda. Negotiations between the eight-nation group will focus on extending the existing free trade agreement between New Zealand, Singapore, Chile and Brunei to include the United States, Australia, Peru and Vietnam. As well as better access to the US market, an eight-nation TPP would pave the way for a potentially bigger prize, a free trade area for the entire Asia-Pacific region. These talks will take some time, but the second round of talks is scheduled to take place in June of this year. Free trade deals are important to New Zealand as we seek to sell our goods and services to the world. We have in the last year signed a free trade agreement with Malaysia and agreed to begin talks with India. It's important that there are as few barriers as possible for our exports, and this government is keen to continue to look at where we can extend our bilateral and multilateral free trade links with the rest of the world. Moving on to the Football World Cup, today I want to announce that Cabinet has agreed to an allocation of money to support the All Whites at the FIFA World Cup in South Africa in the middle of this year. New Zealand's participation in the World Cup has the potential to generate significant flow-on benefits for New Zealand from both increased participation in football domestically and promotion of New Zealand internationally. New Zealand football is under-resourced to capitalise on the potential of a campaign this size. So Cabinet has decided to an allocation of $300,000. This will be used to hire a temporary media manager for New Zealand football in anticipation of significant media attention for the All Whites and the attention they'll get both before and during the FIFA World Cup. The money will also be used for a football leadership program, which will see hand-picked 17 and 18-year-olds from around New Zealand trained in football, coaching youth and leadership skills. They would help run a series of football festival days around the country for 100,000 young people to capitalise on the expected interest in the Cup. The money will also be used to redevelop the New Zealand football website, which is currently inadequate for the demands expected to be placed on it during the Cup. The Minister for Sport and Recreation, Murray McCulley, is issuing a press release to outline this shortly. While I'm on the subject of football, I also want to mark the season the Phoenix team has had. Despite their loss to Sydney at the weekend, I think it's fair to say that all New Zealanders will be proud of how far they've got in the A-League competition this year. Their performance has been stellar, particularly their recent home games. So on behalf of the government, I'd like to congratulate the coach, Ricky Herbert, the captain, Andrew Durante, and the team for all they have achieved this year. They've given us some spectacular moments. And also on a sporting note, this morning I rang and left a message for Sean Quincy for his epic feat in rowing nearly 4,000 kilometres across the Tasman in 54 days. If I can move now to mining, I'd like to make a few comments about the continued hysteria in the media about mining. We're continuing to work on this issue. There have been no discussions, I might hasten to add, though, at Cabinet today. However, I'll repeat what I've said in my morning media interviews, and that is I wouldn't jump to any conclusions. The issue is still before the government for consideration. When we do decide what we're doing, we'll go out and have a discussion with people about it. I've made it clear many, many times that I want to balance two things, and that is the economic benefits we stand to gain from some increased mining activity and the obvious environmental responsibilities we have. The other point I want to make is that this is not an argument about absolutes. It's not a yes to mining or a no to mining that we're actually talking about. The facts of life are is that there are already 82 concessions for mining operations on the Department of Conservation estate. You will all be aware that the House resumes this week after a two-week recess. Tomorrow will largely be taken up by a four-hour debate on the financial reviews of individual departments and offices of Parliament. Wednesday is our Members' Day, and instead of the general debate, there will be a two-hour debate on the budget policy statement. On Thursday, the government will look to have the court's remote participation bill read for a first time, as well as to make progress on other bills. On the order paper, in terms of my activity this week, on Wednesday I'm going to be in New Plymouth, where I'll be marking the 150th anniversary of the Maori Land Wars and taking part in various events. On Thursday I'll be also in New Plymouth, I'll be attending the official opening of the Kupe gas field, and Friday sees me in Hamilton, where I'll be going to a regional tourism conference. In your hands. Well, I'm not going to go into the specifics of that. What I can say is in due course that discussion document will be released, and when it is released, it'll give all interested parties, environmentalists, those interested in mining, and general citizens an opportunity to reflect on the proposals that the government is going to put on the table. Well, I'm just not going to go and dignify leaked information by saying whether it's right or wrong. It needs to be seen in the context of all the things that are going on, and Cabinet didn't consider that issue today. That discussion document, I haven't seen the finalised version of it yet.
So it's
well, some information might have been. Doesn't mean it's accurate information, though. I haven't seen the finalised version yet, so that's the danger you have when people want to leak information. They might think they're right, but they're not. It doesn't mean they necessarily are.
What's the hysteria then? We're not quite sure. What's the hysteria about the reaction?
Oh, just some of the media reports we've seen.
When will you go public with your provisional list of what you intend to do?
Well, the plan is to... Cabinet will eventually consider the finalised discussion document. That'll go into the public domain. There'll be a period of consultation.
Are we talking weeks, months?
Before what?
Before the release of what you intend to do.
The release of the discussion document?
The release of some... If Forrest and Bird are... wrong with what they're putting out in the public arena.
Yeah.
When will you put out in the public arena what you intend to do?
Well, we're going to release the discussion document in due course.
Why is it taking so long to
suggest something? So we're working through the whole process. It's an important issue because I think it is an area where New Zealand can increase its revenue. And as we've said all the way along, I mean, New Zealand's a country where we want to spend money on things which are important, and that means increased healthcare, increased education. We want to expand the revenue the New Zealand economy earns, then that's an area to explore, excuse the pun. But on the other side of the coin, obviously you're balancing that up against environmental issues, and we're very conscious and cognizant of those.
The Green Party and the Forest and Bird organisation both claim that the government is scaling back its original intentions in this regard. Are they right on that score that you maybe started a little bit more ambitiously and actually consider it and scaling back?
I don't think so. I mean, there's been a wide range of work done. Some things, areas that were considered would never be acceptable to Cabinet, but you know, the Minister has a responsibility to look at all of those issues as they put together the discussion document. In due course, we'll release that discussion document, and it'll be an opportunity for people to reflect on whether we've got the balance right, for us to take some soundings from various interested parties. When we've done that, that will then set up whether there's going to be increased mining activity in New Zealand. Look, polling, yes, there's been done some polling. Last I saw was either earlier this year or late last year. Generally, whether they would support increased level of mining activity in New Zealand or words to that effect. Over 50% supported. No, I support his views, and I think the rest of Cabinet supports his view that there is a great opportunity for New Zealand to earn increased revenue in this area. I think what's important, though, is not to narrow the debate solely to Schedule 4. So that's where the discussion has been, that around Schedule 4 land. It's important to recognise that about a third of conservation land is Schedule 4 land. There's actually quite a lot of land which is not Schedule 4 land but sits within the conservation estate. There are other areas where greater exploration or mining or mineral activity may also be beneficial to New Zealand. So it's putting the thing in the context of a wider debate.
So I thought the review was into Schedule 4 itself. Is it
well, the discussion document may be broader than that.
So the original Schedule 4 see what land
could be taken out. And they'll form part of the document that we release. Yeah, we'll give you a broader perspective.
When you say in due course, I mean, can you be a bit more specific about how far away you are from releasing a discussion document?
Well, I haven't seen it myself yet in its finalised form, so I can't be precise, but yeah, I'm in the order of a few weeks is the sort of magnitude that I'm thinking is likely.
So would it be less controversial if you didn't use Schedule 4 land? I mean, I know that Schedule 4 land is considered to be valuable, but there must be other land which is not so important.
Yeah. Well, let me make it clear, we're not ruling out Schedule 4 land. We're just saying that the discussion document is likely to be a broader discussion than just Schedule 4 land.
Is that because there has been opposition to Schedule 4 so that you haven't actually spent your option?
No, because I think it's important that people understand the whole potential of this area, and not all of the potential for New Zealand to earn increased revenue in this area comes in Schedule 4 land. There are wider considerations. No, my point was it's his responsibility as the Minister to canvass and consider with his officials all of the options and then to distill that, and that distillation process has been taking place.
At what point was the review wound down?
I'd say about 3 weeks ago.
Has the government going to back what the Commonwealth
I can't comment on that extensively today. But I would expect an announcement from the Minister of Sport this week on that.
We've heard that the government's not going to back the games. Are you able to give us any clearer?
Well, all I can say to you is that we've been working, as you've been aware, for some time, because the government put up some resources to allow that work to take place on the potential of a bid for Auckland. There was a brief discussion about that at Cabinet today. The Minister is going to have some discussions with that group later on today, as I understand it, and it'd be better if we leave it for him to make any further comments. Yeah. Well, I think it would be better if, in totality, the Minister was able to work his way through that, and I'll leave it for him.
It appears New Zealand cricket is a plug on its available to a later this year.
Yep.
Has that been discussed with the government, and what's the government's position?
It wasn't discussed with me, but I suspect, just looking at their press release, they did have some discussions, I suspect, with the Minister of Sport, because that's in their statement, but there certainly wasn't any discussions with me. What I can say is I support the actions that they've taken. I think they're the responsible actions when you consider the safety and security of the New Zealand players. That would be my expectations. I mean, what's important to understand in terms of the gold card and the position that we're in is that When the gold card was established, it came with, as I understand it, an embedded review process. So what Stephen Joyce has been going through is effectively the triggering of that review process. Now, the view of all of us, I think, is that we accept that it's a card that's been successful for those retired New Zealanders who have decided to use it. We've seen quite a big take-up, particularly in places like Waiheke Island. We've got two issues here. One is it's about an $18 million budget. We'd like to keep it within budget if we can, as we do with all other expenditure. And the second thing is it's quite clear that there's been exponential growth in areas that weren't anticipated, like the Waiheke Island Ferry. Now, I think that does put the government in a position where it can negotiate a much better deal on behalf of the taxpayer with that operator Fuller's. And that's exactly what Stephen Joyce is going to go and do. So at the end of the day, what's at the heart, if you like, of this debate is not whether senior citizens are going to be able to enjoy free travel on free access on off-peak travel. That will remain, but I think the government can do a better job of negotiating with the suppliers. No, likely to come back to Cabinet next week would be my expectations. No, I don't know where those rumours come from. I've genuinely never seen the paperwork on that. I am, and I think it's important to understand that you need security that's commensurate with the risk. And so the Sunday Star Times simply proved that security that's in place for a provincial rugby game is likely to be vastly different to the security that will be in place for a World Cup event. And that's because, by definition, a World Cup event is, a completely different, or presents completely different issues. In my view, the Sunday Star Times, actions on Sunday were a stunt. And nothing more than that, an attempt to sell more newspapers. They weren't a genuine attempt to demonstrate that there was a security risk for the Rugby World Cup, because if they were, then they were comparing apples with oranges.
Is the security assessment of New Zealand in general, has that changed at all recently in terms of terrorist activity overseas?
Yeah, I mean, as a general rule, look, I just don't comment on those sort of security issues. I mean, what I can say is that, I think that we have, as best as we can, good information in that area, and we obviously act, as you expect us to, on any information that we have. We take security around the Rugby World Cup extremely seriously, and you'll see it, in my view, that professionally carried out when the World Cup is here. But wandering into a provincial rugby game and somehow arguing that's akin to a Rugby World match, World Cup match, is ridiculous. It's like going to a regional airport in New Zealand and saying the security there is different to what you find at the international departures at Auckland. Well, yes, it will be.
Sorry to interrupt that.
Yeah.
Will the New Zealand Army be involved in the domestic security for the Rugby World Cup?
Well, I'm not in a position to comment about that at this stage. Limited so far, but I'm conscious of the fact that there are plenty of people working on that.
Prime Minister, how do you suggest Pacific Islanders aim to get their voices heard in Auckland, seeing they are not structured into the Auckland Super City?
Well, in the same way that they have in the past, actually, which is there's specific advisory boards, there's interaction with councils and their communities. I don't see anything different about that in the new super city. In fact, I would argue pretty strongly that the makeup of the local wards, local boards, will definitely see a number of Pacific Islanders on those local boards, and hopefully we'll see some Pacific Islanders as councillors in the Auckland super city as well. Well, to the best of my knowledge, there's been no work done on changing its structure. Yeah, I mean, look, all I can tell you is no one's ever raised that with me. The only people who raised it with me is you guys, actually. No one else has raised it with me. I imagine that will be quite soon now. As you've probably been aware, quite a wide consultation process taking place with Minister Nick Smith and local councils. I know he spent last week in recess going around again consulting with local councils, some discussions about what the future might be for ECANS. So I would anticipate within a week to 2 weeks, not this week, but within a week to 2 weeks, he'll be in a position to come back and reflect on his findings.
Just coming back to the New Zealand cricket decision over Zimbabwe, you obviously back that decision.
I do.
What would have to change there for you to support the New Zealand cricket team going into Zimbabwe? What would you have to see before you back them going in?
Well, it's primarily my concerns around the safety and security of the players. They are the major issues that were raised with us when we last looked at this issue about a year ago. I mean, obviously there are issues of a political dimension in Zimbabwe, but one has to say, you know, some progress is being made in that space. But the main issue is around the safety and security of the players.
They made some reference today to the health system. I mean, do you buy that just the health system, or do you think there's a wider problem?
Well, the issues that were raised in there, and I, as I say, they didn't discuss it with me this time, so over a year ago, the issues that were raised with me were that our players could genuinely be at risk if they went there, and that was a risk that I was uncomfortable with 12 months ago, and I certainly support the actions that the New Zealand Cricket Council has taken today.
Can you see that changing any time soon?
It may do, but at this stage, the risk is there, and that they're acting on positions they find themselves and what they're likely to find themselves in amongst in the next 12 months.
One of the difficulties last year was that any potential fine that could go to the Mugabe regime, does this, using these excuses or justification, that gets around it, does it, so that people wouldn't be able to
keep it fine? I honestly don't know the answer to that, but I suspect that's right, but I don't know the answer to that. Again, the issue was never raised with me, so one assumes that they've got that covered off.
Given the recent Crown Research Institute, how worried are you that that research is running off of the scientists? And is there any way the government can step in the meantime while the funding
is sorted? Right. Well, I think it's important to understand that there's two different things happening here. The CRI Task Force, which we'll be making further comments on and reflecting upon, is the long-term structure for CRIs, and I think that presents some really interesting and actually encouraging perspectives of how we can tackle the CRI sector. In terms of agri-research, that's a completely different issue, and that's got nothing to do with actually the CRI task force. It's really a reflection that there's too much capacity and there's been some underperformance in that area, not so much of the individuals, but generally speaking, research has had some real performance issues. So, but primarily it's about over capacity in certain areas. I mean, they're our largest CRI, and there's a lot of people there.
You don't accept that their reliance on farmers has sort of upset their...
Well, unquestionably, there's been certain things like the wool levy. Whoever says it's
gone best.
Try again. Tape seems to be going, so that's all right. Yes, there's no question that, for instance, in the area of wool, that has affected what they're doing. But as I say, that's meant that they've got too much capacity in a certain area. They're different issues. One is about the long-term structure of the industry. One's about the structure of ag research as it currently finds itself.
It's beautiful that the country is long-term, isn't it? Good for the country that is doing research on more than the farms that need to
tackle. Yeah, but I mean, ultimately, that's the decision for the management at ag research to put up that case. And they receive obviously very significant government funding. They can make that case if they want to.
What do you mean by
that? I think it hasn't made what it should have made in a lot of respects. But anyway, that's another issue, and it's part of why we want to have the CRI task force and adopt some of the recommendations there.
Back to the Department of Emergency, what further work do you need done for Cabinet?
Again, what it demonstrates is when some people want to leak bits of information which aren't either completed or in their totality, they risk, in my view, getting out prematurely in front of a more coherent debate, and that's what we saw in that case. I mean, the work wasn't finished. We were in a position where Cabinet had even considered that information. The case about the merits of it weren't fully examined. We didn't know the economic benefits of it, and we weren't able to answer those questions. And we would never have gotten to a position where we'd gone to a public debate about that unless we could answer all of those questions. You wouldn't expect us to do that. Now, when we're in a position to answer all of those questions, we'll be more than happy to present what we think is the next step.
Will you be taking a wider look at the public service rather than simply focusing on a couple of parts of
it? Well, it's a clear intention of the government to lift the performance of the state sector. And that's one of the six pillars of growth that we've campaigned on and had as our underlying view that to lift productivity in New Zealand. So on an ongoing basis, yes, we want to increase productivity in the state sector. And that'll mean from time to time looking at a number of different factors, not the least of it being the amount of technology and IT spend we have there, right through to the what we think is the right structure of the different departments.
The PSA argues, though, that agencies and departments you're looking at are ones where a chief executive is left.
Well, that may be one reason that presents itself in those cases, but of itself, the retirement of a chief executive is a factor, but not generally the reason why we would choose to go and do something if we were to do it.
Just going back to the mining issue for a moment,
yeah.
In striking that balance that you're attempting to make, has the government done its own independent economic analysis of the potential value of the parts of the dock estate that are at issue, or is it relied on inputs from the mining industry itself to assess the value?
I think it would be largely the former than the latter.
Okay.